Esto es Baugen Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to the Drive Time Show. It is Monday, and I thank you for tuning in. Thanks for deciding to spend some time with us today. Juanjo is with us today, this week, and we got a lot to cover on our show. We have a lot to talk about. Another nice day at the book fair. Another nice weekend, although it rained on Saturday when I was there, but I want to thank everyone who came out to say hello at the book fair. Today on the Drive Time Show, we're going to talk about Henry Ford. Henry Ford. That's right, because it was on this day in 1896 that Henry Ford test drove. So to drive, conducir, to drive, test drive, hacer la prueba. Conducir por primera vez, right? To drive for the first time, to test drive the, a new vehicle he called the quadricycle, which would be an early version of the automobile, the car. One of the first cars, everybody, on this day in 1896. We'll talk about that. And we'll look at the history of flight as well and some of the shortest flights in history. A short history of flight or a history of short flights? I guess that would be a better title, wouldn't it? And we'll have a look at that. Also, we're going to talk business. And finally, por fin, get around to... To get around to finally llegar a hablar de algo, to get around to talking about Levi's, los Levi's, but in English, Levi's jeans and the history of Levi's and its founder, Levi Strauss. We'll have a look at that. Grammar, pronunciation, so much more. Let's get things started. My name is Kyle Miller and welcome to Drive Time.
Welcome Drive Time with Kyle Miller.
Ooh, oh boy. All right, everybody. The Drive Time Show. Thanks for connecting. Thanks for deciding to spend some time with us today. We have lots to cover. We're going to begin the way we always do with an interactive section. How about our Twitter translation?
Twitter translation.
That's right. The Twitter translation. You know this one. I'm going to give you a sentence in Spanish. Yo una frase en español y tú en inglés a través del Twitter. Twitter, se dice aquí, ¿no? Twitter. Twitter, everybody. Twitter. Yeah, Twitter. And the verb to tweet. Yeah. Okay, to send a tweet. To be on Twitter. If you're on there, you can write to me.
Tweet.
Eso es, that's right. But just, Juanjo, how can people find me on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter. I'm Kyle Miller.
Or I'm Kilimia.
Yeah, that's right. I'm Kyle Miller. After all, sigo siendo. Yes, I'm still Kyle Miller. IM, Kile Millar. All right, that. We're going to look at this sentence a little later on. ¿Cómo se dice en inglés? Se ajusta como un guante. Pero como un guante, ¿eh? Se ajusta como un guante. All right. So tell me how to say that in English. We'll talk about it later. Right now, let's move on into the warm-up gym.
The warm-up gym.
Warm up, Jim, everybody. 10 sentences in Spanish, 10 sentences in English. Ya sabes. You know how this one works. All right, I'm going to give you the sentence en voz alta. Well, yo en voz alta. Radio doesn't work unless I speak out loud. But you at home, I want you to give me the sentence out loud as well. También, right? Also, as well. Okay, number one. ¿Sabes cuánto tardarán? Do you know how long it will take them? ¿Sabes cuánto tardarán? Do you know? Do you know how long it will take them? Siempre tardan mucho tiempo. It always takes them a long time. A long time. Mucho tiempo. A long time. Not lawn. Lawn, eso es césped. Lawn. But long. Long. You have to close the back of your throat with the back of your tongue. Right? The back of my tongue touches against the roof of my mouth. El techo. I don't know if you can say that in Spanish. El techo de la boca. ¿Se puede decir eso, Juanjo? ¿Te suena bien? Do you like that? But you know what I mean, no? Pero me entiendes, no? He says, Kyle, I know exactly what you mean, pero no se dice en español. But it doesn't matter. As long as you know what I mean, that's all I care. We say in English, the roof of your mouth, not the ceiling, but the roof. So I guess it's like el tejado, literally, the way we say it in English. Because, by the way, a ceiling is inside the house or inside the building. The roof is outside. So it's like techo is ceiling, tejado, roof. Ah, right? Ceiling and roof. Okay. But if you want to say the word long, largo, long, you have to touch the back of your tongue to the top of your mouth. Otherwise, it's lawn, which is césped. Lawn. I have a long lawn. Césped. Pues, largo. Un césped largo, ¿no? O la césped. Una césped larga, ¿no? Mejor. Un césped. I don't know if it's masculine or feminine. I don't say that word enough to know. But, So we say long, a long lawn. Long lawn. And by the way, a lawn is different from grass, right? Yerba, grass. So grass can be wild, like out in the forest, you have grass growing. Whereas a lawn is intentionally maintained grass. And we have the verb cortar el césped. We have a special verb here, to mow, M-O-W, to mow the lawn, which was one of my first jobs, was mowing lawns. Mowing the lawn for my parents' house. And it wasn't a paid job, it was just a responsibility. Right? My father said, Kyle, you're 12. Now you have to cut the grass. My brother also had a paid job mowing lawns. He mowed a few lawns for people and also for businesses. Kind of like an unofficial, unregistered business, but he mowed lawns and trimmed the grass and the weeds around buildings. So this is, we would say to trim. It's like if you go to the dentist, if you go to the, you go to get your hair cut as well, and you say, hey, just give me a trim. Recórtalo un poquito. Right? Give me a trim because my hair is getting long and I need a trim. So a trim it's not the same as a real haircut. It's not, you're not cutting a lot. You're just saying, look, I'm getting a bit, my hair's getting long. I need a trim. T-R-I-M. So we can say, I'll go for a trim. I'll trim my hair, but we can also trim the grass, right? To trim around the building as we're mowing the lawn, cutting the grass. So there's some interesting vocabulary here, right? Very interesting. Okay, number three. Mi marido no está de acuerdo con tu sugerencia. My husband doesn't agree with your suggestion. Tu sugerencia. Suggestion. Not suggestion, no. Suggestion. My husband doesn't agree with your suggestion. He doesn't like it. Okay. Number four. Dile que me llame. Tell him to call me. Dile que me llame. Tell him, him. And notice we're not saying hin. Hin? No. Him. You have to close your lips, right? Tell him. Tell him to call me. And you can't say, say him. Say him? No. Tell him. Tell someone to. Tell him to do it. Tell him your name. Tell him what you want. You say something to someone. Tell someone something. Tell him to call me. Please, tell him to call me. Number five. Funciona? Does it work? I don't know. It looks like it's broken. Does it work? Funciona? Does it work? Okay, number six. We got a few more. Unos más. We have a few more, everybody. Number six. Nos conocemos bien. We know each other well. Nos conocemos bien. Mm-hmm. We know each other. I know you, you know me. Or I know him and he knows me. Or I know her and she knows me. We know each other. Al uno al otro, no? We know each other well. Well. And we're not going to say we know each other good. No, we know each other well. Because well describes a verb because it is an adverb. Right? Whereas good describes a noun. Rafa Nadal is a good tennis player because he plays tennis very well. Juega muy bien. He plays very well because he's such a good player. Because he's such a good player. Mm. Okay, number seven. No, number eight. Siempre estamos discutiendo. Siempre estamos discutiendo. Qué pena, ¿no? We're always arguing. We're always arguing. Number nine. Él no sabe delegar. He doesn't know how to delegate. No sabe delegar. To know how to. Saber hacer algo. To know how to. He doesn't know how to delegate. Nada lo que él dice es cierto. Nothing he says is true. Nothing he says is true. Nada. How much? Now, a question, if you wanted to ask for that information, you could say, how much of what he says is true? Well, nothing of what he says is true. None. You could also say that. Nada lo que él dice es cierto. None of what he says is true. Nothing of what he says is true. I would prefer none. None of what he says is true. All of it is a lie. None of it is true. None of it is the truth. Truth is the noun, right? True is the adjective. There's nothing more true than the truth. Okay, everybody. Let's push forward a little bit. Let's push forward. Hey, why don't we change order today and do a paragraph? How about that, Juanjo? This is something we haven't done in a while. Let's have a look at today's paragraph of the day.
Of the day.
All right, everybody. Our paragraph of the day. Our paragraph of the day today is number 85. And we'll see what this is from a book. Here at Vaughn, we have a lot of books, and one of them is called 198 Paragraphs for Varied Use. 198 paragraphs for varied use. So there are many ways you can use these paragraphs, of course. And they are interesting because they're written. I like this book a lot. These paragraphs are written not the way normal books are written. They are written the way people speak. It is a book of documented speech. So it's as if you walked into a room and you heard someone speaking and you wrote it down in a heated conversation, right? A busy, real conversation. And you documented, you recorded it maybe, and documented it onto paper. Then you have this paragraph. So there are a lot of, it's real English. So you have a lot of expressions, a lot of phrasal verbs, a lot of different structures. And this is number 85. It says, people often ask me, what do successful entrepreneurs all have in common? What is it that makes them different? Right? Entrepreneurs, empresarios, bueno, realmente emprendedores. Entrepreneurs. Now, this is a word we take from French, right? But yes, people often ask me. Frecuentemente, la gente me pregunta. People often ask me, what do successful entrepreneurs all have in common? What is it that makes them different? Each time I ask them that question, I respond with exactly the same answer. Successful entrepreneurs are those who have a passion for their business and the money to survive their mistakes. I think this is true. A passion for their business and the money to survive their mistakes. I've occasionally seen success happen without sufficient funding, but I've never once seen it happen without passion. This is true. I believe in this. You need passion if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to work, you know, working when there's no certainty of a paycheck. That will motivate you, I'll tell you. That will motivate you to work very hard when you know I'm only going to get paid if I do an exceptional job, if I really create value. I will get paid. If I don't create value, I don't get paid. And I'll tell you, you will work hard. Entrepreneurs usually work 10 or 12 or more hours a day. Many entrepreneurs basically work all the time. Personally, I have some business projects that I do, and outside of Vaughn, outside of teaching. And yes, I work on them at strange hours. If it's Sunday night, but I can get some work done, I'll be working. So entrepreneurs typically, they work according to what they have to do or what they can do, depending on how ambitious they are, how passionate they are. But yes, ambitious, which in Spain, unfortunately, is considered a negative adjective. But especially in America, ambition is considered a great trait. And there's a special link between passion and ambition and ingenuity. Ingenuity and the American dream of success. The dream of the lifestyle that you want and working hard to get it. And the American idea, business mentality is very different. The lifestyle is different and the focus is different. And I guess there's less priority on comfort and more priority placed on being ambitious and trying to accomplish something bigger. And even if it means maybe risking the comfort, risking the security, a greater percentage of people in America, North America, I include Canada in this as well, are willing to take a risk, are excited about taking a risk. And like this paragraph says, successful entrepreneurs are those who have a passion for their business and the money to survive their mistakes. So we all make mistakes. And it's important to make mistakes. It's good to make mistakes because that's how you learn what's wrong. You learn what doesn't work so that you can adjust and you can change your strategy. And, very often mistakes can be expensive in business. But this is true in life. This is true in all parts of life. It's not just in business. This is true in relationships as well. You never know what type of person you want to be with until you have a few failures. You have a few failed relationships. Or you don't know what type of job you want to do until you've tried a few and realized that you don't like them. And you're passionate about something else. So there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. It's important to make mistakes. It's good to make mistakes. We have to make mistakes. But like this paragraph says, successful entrepreneurs, los empresarios con éxito, son aquellos que sienten pasión por su negocio y tienen el dinero el dinero necesario para sobrevivir a sus errores. I think that's true. They have the money to survive their mistakes. I've occasionally seen success happen without sufficient funding. Funding, right? Sin fondos. Without funding. We have this idea of funds, money, funds, los fondos, dinero, money. But we can also say funding, which means available money. But I've never once seen it happen without passion. And I agree absolutely. And I read a lot of books by entrepreneurs, different business people. And one thing I also notice is not that you should avoid sleep by any means. We need sleep. Most people need more of it. But a common trait is that most successful entrepreneurs don't sleep much, because they're working all the time. You know, I don't believe in luck. People say, oh, Kyle, you're very lucky to have this and that and to do a radio show. You're lucky. Well, no, I worked very hard and I made a lot of sacrifices. And when you make sacrifices in one area of your life, you're giving up something else. So someone who succeeds in business, usually they make sacrifices in other areas. They take time away from other things. But it's not luck. It's hard work. Okay? Anyway, yeah, so that's our paragraph. It's number 85 from a book we have called 198 Paragraphs for Varied Use. I do like this book. I recommend this book. And I also recommend, if you have kids who want to have a great positive experience with English, we have summer camps in Vaughan. Campamentos de Verano, kids camps. And we have thousands of families that come back, that return each year because of the great experience that the kids had in the Vaughan summer camp. And it's a camp where you really take advantage of 100% of the time. There's no time to get bored, right? It's like a trip abroad without leaving Spain, a complete experience in English. These camps work very well. It's a perfect mix of fun and immersion in English with this important element of motivation so that the kids enjoy the camp. And as a result, they want to be there and they want to be engaged and they want to use the language. And that motivation element is very important. And so it establishes a positive relationship with the language, which is a very good investment. So if you're interested in sending your kids to the Vaughan summer camps, we have a 10% discount right now. A 10% discount. And you can get that by calling 91133 9111335832. Give us a call. Find out about these camps. Get some information and ask them about the discount. It said, Kyle said that there was a discount. And if they don't give it to you, you can tell them to talk to me. Because, you know, if you're, as long as you call over the next few days, you can get this discount, 10% on the summer camps. But act as these do fill up. Like I said, we have thousands of kids that go to many camps all around the country through the summer. So you want to get these, you want to get a good spot before they fill up. 9111335832 is the number. And, 9111335832. I'm going to take a short break, everybody. I'll be back in a couple minutes, so please don't touch that dial.
Hijos aprendan inglés de manera entretenida con una colección de películas que hemos realizado con la colaboración de 20th Century Fox. Una serie de películas para que tus hijos y tú podáis aprender inglés de manera divertida. Disfruta del inglés, del mejor cine en tu delegación más cercana o en baugantienda.com. Ahora por compras superiores a 30 euros, envío gratis.
Las empresas tienen que ser algo más que un lugar donde se compra tiempo de vida a cambio de unos euros. Tienen que ser un proyecto. De ahí la relevancia del liderazgo, de ahí la relevancia de que haya una ilusión compartida.
Si quieres descubrir las claves del éxito de la mano de Richard Vaughan y Javier Fernández Aguado, no te pierdas las dos nuevas convocatorias del seminario Emprender y Liderar, las claves del éxito. El jueves 27 de septiembre o el jueves 25 de octubre de 16:30 a 20:30 horas en Áncora, Madrid, calle Trafalgar 6. Solicita más información en grupovaughan.com/seminario.
Los cursos intensivos de verano de Vaughan son diferentes a otros cursos intensivos de verano. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, nosotros no metemos entre 10 y 12 alumnos en cada clase. Nosotros tenemos un máximo de 6 alumnos por clase. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, no somos rígidos, somos flexibles. Puedes hacer un curso de 1, 2, 3 o 4 semanas, como tú decidas. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano no somos teóricos, somos prácticos. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano no damos lecciones, motivamos. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano nuestros profesores no son los protagonistas de la clase, nuestros alumnos lo son. Los cursos intensivos de verano de Vaughan, porque somos diferentes.
Entra en grupovaughan.com. Recuerda, si contratas 2 semanas, tienes un 20% de descuento y de regalo un taller online. Infórmate.
Echo de menos esas clases por teléfono. Echo de menos esas tardes de clases en grupo. Echo de menos esas risas cuando nos equivocamos o pronunciamos mal. Echo de menos el repeat again. O el ask me. O el tell her to tell him to ask me. Sabes que me vas a echar de menos. Que luego te arrepentirás. Entonces, ¿por qué me abandonas?
Este verano no abandones tu inglés. Y es por eso que queremos ponértelo muy fácil, ofreciéndote grandes descuentos en los cursos y programas con el método Vaughan que más demanda tienen en verano. Entra en grupovaughan.com o llama al 911-335-831.
Los cursos intensivos de verano de Vaughan son diferentes a otros cursos intensivos de verano. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, nosotros no metemos entre 10 y 12 alumnos en cada clase. Nosotros tenemos un máximo de 6 alumnos por clase. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, no somos rígidos, somos flexibles. Puedes hacer un curso de 1, 2, 3 o 4 semanas, como tú decidas. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, no somos teóricos, somos prácticos. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, no damos lecciones, motivamos. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, nuestros profesores no son los protagonistas de la clase, nuestros alumnos lo son. En nuestros cursos intensivos de verano, nuestros profesores no son los protagonistas de la clase, nuestros alumnos lo son. Los cursos intensivos de verano de Vaughan, porque somos diferentes.
Ven a Vaughan, disfruta el verano con Vaughan. Más información en grupovaughan.com.
Recuerda, si contratas 2 semanas, tienes un 20% de descuento y de regalo un taller online. Infórmate.
Welcome back to the Drive Time Show. My name is Kyle Miller. You're listening to Vaughn Radio. It's 6:30 here as I speak, and we're going to begin our second half hour with a look at some vocabulary related to the world of marketing today. El marketing, right? That's an easy one to know in English. Marketing, everybody. We have the word publicidad. That in English, advertising. Now, we do have a word publicity, to get publicity. But publicity is what you hope to achieve with your advertising. So advertising is what you pay for. Campaigns. And then publicity is the coverage and the exposure that advertising brings you. Right? Percepción. We can say perception. Perception. La marca, una marca, a brand. B-R-A-N-D, brand, brand. Una marca, a brand, yes. A brand, una marca. Competencia, competition. La competencia, the competition. Presupuesto, budget. The budget, a budget, un presupuesto, el presupuesto. Deseos, wants. And people are saying, but what does that have to do with wants? What does that have to do with marketing? Well, it's important to understand what people want and people and what people need, right? Wants and needs. Deseos y luego necesidades, right? People are going to fulfill their needs before their wants, right? Demografía, demographics, very powerful for economics and for marketing. Demographics, people, the idea that people tend to act their age. From a marketing perspective, it's interesting to know this. People tend to act their age. Old people behave like old people. Young people behave like young people. You know, we have the baby boom generation. Right after the Second World War, all the soldiers came home from war and they started families. And that was basically the baby boom generation. El boom, you say in Spanish too, a boom. A boom in birth, baby, the baby boom. But yeah, that's part of, looking at all that sort of stuff is part of demographics. Distribución. Distribution. Una característica is a feature. A feature. Feature se escribe a feature. Feature of a product. Población. ¿Cuál es la población? What's the population. 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 I think the population of Spain is about 46 million. I think the population of Canada is about 32 million. Population. Cuota de mercado. Market share. Market share. Market share. Punto de venta. Point of sale. Or we often say POS, point of sale. But we often say POS, a point of sale, like a point of sale display. A little box or a display or something that is put out in a certain location. A point of sale display. Fidelidad de una marca. O fidelidad a una marca. Brand loyalty. To be loyal. Ser leal. Literally. Loyal to a brand. Brand loyalty. Escasez o falta. This is called scarcity. So as things are scarce, like if the amount of olive oil available in a market, for example, reduces, you have a scarcity, una escasez de aceite de oliva, por ejemplo, o de agua, o de lo que sea. Scarcity. And so scarcity causes prices to go up, to increase, to rise. And utilidad. This is an interesting idea. Utilidad in Spanish. In English, utility. And utility. I remember the example talking about utility. My economics. Economics teacher in university. One of my first economics courses. Talking about the marginal utility. Marginal. So marginal basically means for the next unit. The marginal cost. The marginal utility, right? So what would be the cost of producing one more, right? If we make 20,000 books, if we print 20,000 copies of a book, what is the cost of book number 20,001? What's the cost of the next book? That is the marginal cost. So when you have a high amount of fixed costs that can be spread, allocated over a number of units, then your marginal cost can become quite low, or it decreases significantly. So it depends on the type of business you're in. It depends on the type of, now this is costing and not, well, yeah, what I'm talking about now is marginal costing and not marginal utility. But the marginal cost is, yeah, the cost of the next unit. So, or maybe you produce something that is very labor intensive or where your cost is materials. And in that case, maybe you have a low fixed cost and a high variable cost. So the marginal cost, the cost of the next unit, doesn't decrease so significantly. But costing is very important. Figuring out cost, determining how much things cost to make, and to produce and to sell, to bring to market is very important. And so accounting for this is very important. So you have different types of accounting. You have basically financial accounting, which is preparing the financial statements for external reporting and for taxation and for complying with rules and regulations and publishing your financial performance and for taxation and these things. But then you also have managerial accounting, or also known as cost accounting, which is primarily used for internal uses, for making management decisions. And figuring out if we're already making this many cars, how much would it cost to make more than another one, or 1,000 more, or 10,000 more? And what happens to our overall cost? And so we can optimize our production accordingly and optimize our resources accordingly. So this is the idea of the term marginal in accounting terms, in economic terms. But marginal utility. The utility is very important. Utility, from an economics perspective, is very important. It refers to how much use or how much appreciation. Utility is kind of like enjoyment, use. And enjoyment comes out of something. So the marginal utility would be how much you do enjoy the next unit. And the example that I had with this, the example I was given by my university first course economics professor. The first, I took many economics courses, but this was in the first one, I believe. It was with chocolate, eating chocolate. So if you have a piece of chocolate, you break it up into many little, let's say you break your chocolate bar into 10 pieces. But it's a big chocolate bar. There's a lot of chocolate. And you feel like having some chocolate. Te apetece. Right? You feel like having some chocolate. So you eat a piece of chocolate and it's delicious. Oh man, that was good. That was really good. I want to have another piece of chocolate. So you eat a second piece of chocolate. And when you eat the second piece, it tastes good. It tastes very good. Maybe not quite as good as the first one because you just had one. And so you're not craving. You're not having that strong desire for chocolate as much as the first one, but you still enjoy it very much. It's delicious. The third one, it's good. The third one tastes good too. The fourth one doesn't taste nearly as good. You're starting to notice that you don't want chocolate as much because you've just had four pieces. It's very sweet. Your mouth is full of the flavor of chocolate. And then the fifth piece comes and you want it. It's still kind of nice, but you don't, the benefit to you, the enjoyment from eating a piece of chocolate is reducing with every piece that you eat. And by the time you get to the eighth piece of chocolate, you don't want any more. You don't want to eat any more chocolate. In fact, you're getting tired of it. You put it away, you put it in the refrigerator, you don't want any more chocolate. So this is the law, this is an important idea in economics. It's called the law of declining marginal utility. So utility refers to the benefit from something or the use, the enjoyment and appreciation and benefit from some consumption. And the law of marginal utility, marginal, we saw that word 5 minutes ago, for the next piece, for the next unit. And so this idea of declining marginal utility means that as we consume the next, the more we eat, the less we feel like eating more of it. And this is true with chocolate. This is true with anything else. Coca-Cola, I like drinking Coca-Cola, but if I have a glass of Coke, I will enjoy it, but a second glass will not taste as good. And if you obligate me to drink 8 glasses of Coca-Cola, I'm not going to enjoy that 8th glass at all. And that's the idea of utility and the law of declining marginal utility. Okay? Hey, let's go ahead and see what happened on this day. We're going to look at some history, everybody. Let's go back to 1896 with a section called Today in History.
Today in History.
Go back to 1896, and Henry Ford drove test drive to hacer la prueba, the first journey by car on this day in 1896, en el año 1896, no? 1896, right? Yeah, 1896, thank you. And he called it the quadricycle. Quadricycle, quad being four. So it was like a bicycle, unicycle, bicycle, tricycle, and quadricycle. Four wheels. Now it was about 4 a.m. A las 4 de la mañana. A las 4 de la mañana, 4 a.m. on June 4th, 1896, in a little shed, like a little building, a shed. Behind his home in Detroit, Henry Ford unveiled the quadricycle, the first car he ever designed or drove. Now, Ford was working as the chief engineer in the Edison Illuminating Company when he started working on the quadricycle. He was on call at all hours to ensure that Detroit had electrical service 24 hours a day. He was on call, right? He was available to be called and to go out and fix something. But he was able to use this flexible working schedule to experiment with this project of his, building a horseless carriage, a carriage without a horse, a horseless carriage with a gasoline-powered engine. And his obsession, he had this obsession with the gasoline engine, which had begun when he saw an article on the subject in a magazine in 1895, an issue of American Machinist magazine. In the following March, another Detroit engineer named Charles King took his own hand-built vehicle made of wood, which had a four-cylinder engine that could travel up to 5 miles per hour. He took it out for a ride, fueling Ford's desire to build a lighter and faster gasoline-powered model. So, as something that would happen a lot through his career, he used his considerable powers of motivation and organization to get the job done. He would hire friends to work, including King, right, who had already made Charles King, who had made an early version of an automobile, and assistants to help him bring this vision to life. After a few months of work and many setbacks, right, retrasos, many setbacks, he was finally ready to test drive his creation, which was basically a light metal frame fitted with four bicycle wheels and powered by a two-cylinder, four-horsepower gasoline engine. And like I said, it was the morning of June 4th, 1896, when Ford, James Bishop, his chief assistant, attempted to wheel the quadricycle out of the shed. But then he realized he had a problem. He said, okay, it's ready to go. We're going to put it into the... We're going to put it out in the street and we're going to drive the car. But he realized at that moment that it was too wide to fit through the door. To solve the problem, he took an axe to the brick wall of his shed and he smashed it to make space for the vehicle to be rolled out. So he was enthusiastic, right? He was willing to break his shed, his little granero, little building, little structure where he was building the car. Now this guy Bishop, his assistant James Bishop, was going ahead of him on a bicycle to alert passing carriages and pedestrians. And Henry Ford drove this 500-pound quadricycle down Detroit's Grand River Avenue, circling around the three main streets. Now, of course, they had these streets because of horse and carriage traffic. And the quadricycle had two driving speeds, no reverse, no brakes, very basic steering ability, and a doorbell button as a horn, right? Ring, ring. So like a horn, a bell, you know, a doorbell or a horn. And the top speed it reached was about 20 miles per hour. So it was much faster than King's invention. Like I said, Charles King had one that could go about 5 miles per hour. But Henry Ford, hey, he could cruise 20 miles an hour. That's pretty fast. That was pretty good. Aside from one breakdown on Washington Boulevard due to a faulty spring, the drive was a success, and Ford was on his way to becoming one of the most famous success stories in American business history. So there you go. It was on this day, the first real car. I mean, like I said, the other guy here had a car, but it could only go 5 miles an hour, and it was much smaller and more basic. But the first car with steering, two gears, 20 miles per hour, decent speed. This was Henry Ford test driving his so-called quadricycle on this day in 1896. There you have it, folks. All right. I'd like to take a minute to explore your responses on Twitter. We have a bunch of people writing in. Quite a few people participating on Twitter. And the sentence today was as follows. Se ajusta como un guante. Como un guante, Juanjo. Right? Se ajusta como un guante. And Ruben writes in and says, Hi, Kyle, it fits like a glove. Ooh, it fits like a glove, says Joaquin, and so does Megan and Maria Carmen. Fits like a glove. Have a nice evening. Liv says, it tights like a glove. No, well, she said like a globe. Eso es un globo. No, a glove. G-L-O-V-E. Glove. It fits like a glove. And we're not going to say as a glove. Most people have this right. Well done. It fits like a glove. Very good. Well done. All right. Now, we were talking about one of the early, the early test drive of Henry Ford's first car, the quadricycle. But now let's take to the skies and talk a little bit about flight. How about some facts? Let's go ahead and look at some facts about some of the shortest flights in history in a section we call And That's a Fact.
It's a strange world we live in, ladies and gentlemen. A world where knowledge is power. A world where we strive to know as much as we can. Did you know that it's impossible to sneeze with your eyes open? Or that a shark can detect one part of blood in 100 million parts of water? Today's fact might not turn you into a genius, but you just might find it interesting.
And that's a fact.
Well, like I said a few minutes ago, we talked about the first vehicle in an early version of a car, Henry Ford's quadricycle, on this day in 1896. But back in 1927, it was Charles Lindbergh flying nonstop from New York to Paris. But in 2018, it's maybe Singapore Airlines launching a 20-hour nonstop flight from New York to Singapore. 20 hours nonstop. My gosh. Now, the focus of aviation seems to always have been flying further, staying in the air longer. But some flights, some airlines have also found it profitable to launch very, very short flights. And just last month in May, we saw the launch of one of the world's shortest international flights. It was a 15-minute flight between Aruba and Punto Fijo in Venezuela. Punto Fijo y Aruba, the Caribbean island of Aruba. Now, it's only 15 minutes. So thinking about this new flight, this short 15-minute flight, let's take a look at some of the shortest international commercial flights and some facts. That's why we call it And That's a Fact. Some facts about some of the shortest flights. One of them is in the Dutch Caribbean, a place called Sint Maarten. Sint, not Saint, but Sint Maarten, to Anguilla in the British, which is a British territory. And this one is a 10-minute trip, 12 miles between Princess Juliana International Airport and Anguilla's Clayton J. Lloyd International Airport. Other super short international routes from Sint Maarten include a 15-minute, 20-mile journey to the French Overseas Collectivity of St. Barts. St. Barts, I've never been there. Other short international routes. Yeah, there are several other short international routes around the Caribbean and around Venezuela. Let's see, Aruba to Punto Fijo. Yeah, here we go. 51 miles, so it's 82 kilometers. And this came to be just this year. In January of this year, Venezuela implemented a 3-month commercial blockade on the Dutch Caribbean islands of Aruba, Curaçao, Bonaire, and so there were these connections between Venezuela and Aruba that remained restricted but they wanted certain routes to remain open and to allow certain movement, so they opened a bunch of small flights. Now, this short, my gosh, 51 miles, 82 kilometers, and it costs $215. So it works out to be about $27 per minute. It's expensive. Here's one up in Scotland, Westray to Papa Westray in Scotland. This is called Long Air, the airline. 2 miles, everybody, 3 kilometers. It's a narrow stretch of water off the coast of Scotland. And they have a small airplane that'll take you across it. It's kind of interesting. Some of these short flights, interesting stuff. We're out of time, everybody. I want to thank you for listening. I'm going to be back in a couple minutes with our next class, Inglês Online TVE. We'll look at class number 106. I hope you'll join me. We'll see you in a few minutes. Inglês Online TVE. See you then. Bye-bye.
Descubre, aprende. Esto es Vaughan Radio.
Napoleon spent 2 years, from 1803 to 1805, preparing an army to invade England. He amassed soldiers, he built ships, he even